Hello and welcome to Talking Europe. It's not easy to strike a balance between regulation and economic growth. Workers expect to be protected, and the EU also has plenty of regulations to honour if it's to meet its targets on the environment and net zero. But businesses also need to grow. My guest today says that they're being held back by excessive red tape as well as by other factors. That's not only bad for companies, but it also hurts the EU's competitiveness compared to China and the US, according to Marcus Beyrer. He heads Business Europe, the largest business organization on the continent, which represents national employers, associations and companies. And he joins me from Brussels. Marcus Beyrer, thank you so much for being my guest. Now, your members are saying that the EU has a problem of attractiveness, of attracting investors, and things are not improving, apparently.
Well, we run a report called European Reform Barometer every year in spring. So the result last year was that 90% of our members were saying that the business location is worse off than 3 years before. And the result of this year was that the situation has not improved, has continued to slightly decline. So there's an issue, and we see it in all figures. We see that more investment happens outside Europe than in Europe. We see that we lag behind in growth compared to our major competitors, and we also see that we had employment in industrial production declining. So we have a problem. The industry location is under pressure, and we'll need to find answers to this.
So you mentioned several factors behind this stagnation, and that includes excessive regulation and lengthy permitting procedures. Maybe we can just focus on that for a moment.
Well, we ask our members what is the reasons for this development. And the reason number one is, of course, the too high energy prices. This is a very important reason. But then our members talk about regulatory tsunami, meaning that we simply had too much bureaucracy falling on our members in the last years. And we have too lengthy permitting procedures in order to make industrial investments and the infrastructure investments happening.
Yeah, and the European Commission keeps talking about simplifying procedures, and actually it talks about reducing reporting requirements by 25%. But you're suggesting that the opposite is happening, right? If you're talking about a tsunami of regulation, perhaps we can take the concrete example of the Corporate Due Diligence Directive, which has added these reporting requirements on companies that you say is unworkable.
Well, I mean, this target of the European Commission to reduce the regulatory burden via reporting requirements by 25% is highly welcome. This is a step in the right direction, as are the Net Zero Industry Act or the Critical Raw Materials Act. But, of course, there are still too many other points adding burden, and you rightly mentioned the CSDDD directive, the Due Diligence Directive, on which we have always been ready to take up responsibility, and our companies are taking responsibility in all the markets they invest. But we always said the solutions need to be workable and need to also work for companies. And what we have at the table now, and what is the result of this compromise that has been found in Coreper a couple of weeks ago, is simply not workable, and imposes obligations on European companies in a unilateral way, with the risk that some companies might leave markets in Asia or in Africa.
I was going to ask you about that. Is there, because you do say in your Rebooting Europe document that that European companies could pull out of global operations. So we're back to this question of competitiveness. But is there any evidence of that already?
Well, there's clear evidence of this. I mean, I cited it before. We see that already before the exogenic shock, what was the war in Ukraine, we had the investment flows going outside of Europe, meaning more investment happening outside Europe than in Europe. Mm. And we also see that industrial production is declining. We see that employment in the industrial production is declining. And we also see that we are falling behind our major competitors as far as growth is concerned. You know that Europe will grow by 0.5% this year, the US by 2.5%, and China, of course, even higher. But more important than this, if you look at the last 10 years, In 7 out of these 10 years, the U.S. growth was significantly larger than in Europe. So we have an issue, and we need to find solutions to redress the situation.
What is the solution then? Is it to push back on these environmental standards, which are in the background of these directives, like the Corporate Due Diligence Directive?
Well, no, the solution is to, find the balance in these pieces of legislation. And as I said, we were always ready to be part of a workable solution. Like, for instance, we have been in the Forced Labor Directive. This is also something which will impose burdens on companies. This will not be easy to implement. But we have been on board, not only on the targets, but also on the measures, because there was a clear attempt to find a workable solution for business.
Just
in
looking
the due diligence, what the solution that was found, as we see it and as our members see it, is not workable for business, and therefore is a bad compromise.
When I look at your document, A Resilient European Union, you've got 7 points there with sort of the main policy prescriptions that you promote. There's nothing that directly mentions the environment, and there's, I would say, an emphasis on moving away from a regulatory approach. So environmental groups would be pretty concerned, I think, reading that.
No, what we want is, and it's very clear, we have always been supporting the Green Deal, and we have always been supporting the targets of the Green Deal. But what we are saying is we see that we are losing out as far as global competitiveness is concerned, and therefore we will need to complement the Green Deal by an industrial deal.
Yeah, I was going to come on to that, because we saw 850,000 manufacturing jobs disappear, according to the European Trade Union Confederation, between 2019 and 2023. What jobs do you want to create? Is it those jobs that disappeared, or a different kind of industrial job?
Well, I think we need to do both. It's very important that we create jobs in the new sectors, and this is why we are fully on board in generating the investment conditions for new industries and for green industries and for the transformation. But we also need to make sure that we do not lose more jobs on the other side of the spectrum. So what we need is not only create the green jobs, but to green the whole industrial value chains. Because we will only be successful if we are able to have successful value chains in Europe. So to bring, as you show the windmills, to bring an example, it's very important that we invest in renewable energy. It's important that we produce the technology, and the technology is not just coming from elsewhere, but it's also important where the steel to produce these windmills comes from and where the turbines are produced. Mm. So what we need is to transform the whole value chains in a way that we will have successful value chains on European soil.
So does all of that start with retraining workers and people having new skills? Is that what your companies are lacking at the moment?
This is another thing, and we just had a meeting with the Americans yesterday, and they said if there was not all these other big problems caused by the war and cost of energy, this would of course be the most pressing issue, because all our companies tell us that they lack skilled labor and they lack skilled people. So this is a big concern. We are satisfied as the European Commission has come up with an action plan to address this topic, because this is one of the most burning issues. And the issues we are asking for is we need to mobilize the inactive in order to bring the people to the labor market in Europe, which could be in the labor market. We need to facilitate intra-EU mobility. And we also need to attract the qualified labor from third countries we also need for our labour markets.
Yeah, let's break that down. I mean, firstly, on the action plan, as you know, there's been this European year of skills that's been going on. Do you see that actually bringing any concrete change, or is it more sort of public relations at this point?
Well, the European years of skills comes to an end. It was important because the issue was discussed. But we have higher expectations towards the action plan because, I mean, it was just presented and we are now discussing the details. But it puts the finger on the right issues. So, as I said, there's many people in Europe who could work and are not part of the labor market, partly because the circumstances are not there, partly because maybe the incentives are not always set in the right way. So this is something we need to have a look at.
What about labor from outside the EU? You touched on that. What kind of skills do your companies need from people that are outside the EU?
Well, if we look at, and of course it's a mosaic. I mean, it's very much activating the inactive. It's about training and retraining the people we have. It's about intra-EU mobility, but it is also attracting talent from where we can get it. And of course, the issue will be, this will need to be more precise than it has been in the past. We will need to find ways to attract the hands and brains we will need for our production processes and we want to have as part of our labor markets.
We'll leave it there. Thank you so much to my guest, Markus Behrer, Head of Business Europe. That's all for this part of Talking Europe. In part two, we'll be going to Romania, where the EU election campaign is heating up.